Come to order. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
Here.
Berger. Berger. Blake.
Here.
Flickery.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Botten.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burkhart.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Connolly.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison. Excused. Edmonds. Eklund. Esquivel,
here.
Freeman,
here.
Gay,
here.
Gingery,
here.
Goggles,
here.
Greer,
here.
Green,
here.
Harshman, Harshman, Harvey,
here.
Hunt, here. Illaway,
here.
Yagi,
here.
Kasparik,
here.
Croker,
here.
Crone,
here.
Lockhart,
here.
Laux,
here.
Lubno,
here.
Madden,
here.
McKim,
here.
McComey,
here.
Miller,
here.
Moniz,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Patton,
here.
Peasley,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Petroff,
here.
Korberg,
here.
Roscoe,
here.
Simlick,
here.
Shepperson,
here.
Steward,
here.
Stebson,
here.
Teeters,
here.
Throne,
here.
Vronish,
here.
Wallace,
here.
Zwanitzer Dan,
here.
Zwanitzer Dave,
here.
Mr. Speaker,
here.
Berger,
here.
Harshman, Harshman, okay. 58 present, 1 excused, 1 absent.
Join us in the morning prayer with Father Ruzicka.
Let us pray. Father, maker of all, in you we live and move and have our being. We pause as we begin our day to acknowledge that you are God and we are not, but we are your servants. Be present with us. Grant us the gift of wisdom to know right from wrong. Grant us the understanding to discern the path to the future that you choose for us. Give us the patience to listen to all points of view, especially those that differ from our own. Make us responsive to the needs of people. Grant us the courage to overcome obstacles to lead us into our future. May we know fortitude tempered by discretion. Lord, may your blessings descend upon us now and forever. Amen. Amen.
If you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, John.
Journal Committee Report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 16, 2011 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Freeman, Representative Kasparik.
Today we have Doctor of the Day, Dr. Jerry Smith from Cheyenne, and Nurses of the Day, Linda Clamp and Deb Lane from the Wyoming Medical Center in Casper. Welcome. Yay! Representative Freeman.
Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Up to my right is two people from my hometown, the city of Green River. It's city administrator, Barry Cook, and the clerk treasurer, Jeff Neeters. Please welcome them to the House.
Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, tonight at the Holiday Inn at 5:30 is the annual legislative reception for ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. We'd invite everybody, whether you're members or not, to come to the Holiday Inn, partake in some light hors d'oeuvres and beverages.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
It's right. Straight up there, we have the city of Rock Springs. They came down to serve you all famous Rock Springs Kronskis last night. Members of our city council, Billy Shalotta, Glenice Wendorf, Council President David Tate, and Chad Banks. Please welcome them.
Mr. Speaker,
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, there's probably nobody on this floor that has been through what the good Representative Davison's been through. And, well, at least in the last year or so. I'm sure others have been through things, but I'd just like everybody to stand and bow their heads for a moment of silence for that lady. Thank you.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, we'll have a joint conference committee meeting in Senate S-19 to discuss Senate File 23. I think we finally got a time frame when the House and the Senate can get together. It's just been a little problem with who gets out first and who adjourns first. So tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, Senate 19 to discuss Senate File 23.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Ladies and gentlemen, please help me in the North Gallery if my compass is correct. Klaus Hansen, a member of the Laramie City Council, and Janine Jordan, the Laramie City Manager.
Representative Escobel.
Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, sir. Please proceed.
It is my honor today to introduce you to our honorary page of the day, Dario Melanson Escobel, and that's Senator Escobel's grandson, and his grandma Jackie's up there, and his mom Jackie, and his dad Mike, and sister Ariel, all on the balcony up there. Welcome there.
We're at that order of business, reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, education, which was reports, which was referred to Senate file 146 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number five, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 7 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Swanitzer, Dan, excused, Davison, signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 37 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley, signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman.
We're at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 7.
Senate File 7, introduced by Agriculture Committee, an act relating to the State Fair.
Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number one to Senate File 7 and ask for your favorable consideration. There was some concern, not on general file yesterday, but from one of our astute colleagues from House District 28, with respect to two different sections in this Senate file. One is in the area of, on page 3, in 1110-106, and on the next page in 1110-107 under the powers of the Board of Agriculture, when we had proposed in the Senate file to add the director language in there in those different places. And the question was, with respect to 1110.106 on the admissions charges, for example, if the director and the board had some difference of opinion as to how to resolve issues with respect to charges, you know, that would be charged at the state fair, or if the director or the board had some concerns about, you know, within the powers in 107, how would they be resolved? Would the director be an ex-official voting member of the board, or would the director's opinion, if it was different than the board, prevail, or would the board prevail over the director? And it went through the process, and no one really picked that up until some concerns that came not as a part of the public record yesterday, but some sidebar conversations later. So I'd visit with a director last evening, and his advice was to just to take the director language out of there and leave it like it is. So, Mr. Speaker, what the amendment does, it just deletes that section 1110.106, because that's the only changes that we had contemplated in there, is adding the director language. And then on page 4, it removes the director language out there. So we'll go back to where we were, and the director thought that would be perfectly appropriate and asked that we would support that. And I would ask that you would support second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the good chairman of Ag for looking into this issue for me. I think this is a good amendment, and I would encourage support of the amendment and of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for their first time, second time prior to the sponsor? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7 has been adopted. Senate File 7 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 14.
Senate File 14, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to counties, election districts.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 14. Ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a short amendment. It basically changes the effective date of the bill from immediately to July 1, 2011. I spoke with the original person that brought the bill to the Senate Corporations, Joint Corporations bill, and she was fine with that. I spoke to the a few of the members of the Appropriations Committee, and they're fine with that. Being that there's no rush to implement this, I would bring this short change of the effective date to July 1, 2011. Staff have questions, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Speaker?
Chairman Illway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge adoption of this amendment. This is a friendly amendment.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14 has been adopted, Senate File 14 having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 16.
Senate File 16, introduced by the School Facility Committee, an act relating to school facilities adequacy assessment.
Representative Peterson. Or is this Harshman? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you were at the very beginning. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 16. Ask for your favorable consideration. Folks, this is the amendment we talked about briefly on the Committee of the Whole yesterday. Simply adds the building systems condition reference guide to the language that talks about how we score the condition of our school buildings. Stand for questions.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 16, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 16 has been adopted. Senate File 16 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 36.
Senate File 36, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to public schools regarding seclusion and restraint in schools.
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Speaker, I would withdraw second reading amendment number 1.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 36 has been withdrawn. Representative Barbuto.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move committee of the whole amendment number 2 to Senate File 36. This has to do with what...
Second reading amendment.
Excuse me. This has to do... The question came up the other day about what a device is and what would be appropriate. So, on the bill, if you have it in front of you, and this amendment should be in your box, your tray, line 22, starting with intervening. Intervening in a fight or using an assistive or protective device prescribed by an appropriately trained professional or professional team. I'd stand for questions or ask for your favorable consideration.
Anyone else for their first time? First time, second time? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 36, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 36 has been adopted. Senate File 36 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 39.
Senate File 39, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish regarding aquatic invasive species reciprocity.
Senate File 39, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 48.
Senate File 48, introduced by the Wildlife and Natural Resource Committee, an act relating to Wyoming Wildlife regarding Trust Account Board.
Senate File 48, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 57.
Senate File 57, introduced by Senator Anderson, act relating to the 100th anniversary of the State Fair.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57. Ask for your favorable consideration. This changes it from the Stair Fair to the State Fair.
I doubt there's any discussion. All right. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Oh. All the... No. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57 has been adopted. Senate File 57 hadn't been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 59.
Senate File 59, introduced by Senator Escobel, an act relating to the Wyoming Controlled Substances Act.
Senate File 59, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 71.
Senate File 71, introduced by Senator Christensen, an act relating to education hunter safety courses.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1. This is a really good bill. I just wanted to make it a little better and just clarify in there. There is a statute that's actually not in your bill, but I'll just read it to you real quick. What it says is every school district shall require any employee who may have access to minors to submit to fingerprinting for the purpose of obtaining state or national criminal history record before they begin. For the most part, Game and Fish is going to be picking, if you look in the bill, they'll be choosing who will be the teachers of this. It won't be going through the Professional Teacher Standards Board. The Standards Board would normally do the fingerprinting. It turns out Game and Fish actually does it too with their folks that teach these classes. So this is more of a belt and suspenders type of amendment because I think they already sort of do all this, but I just wanted to make sure it was clear in there that these people were going to be background checked before they were in a classroom with children.
For your first time, Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the good representative just said, this Game and Fish already do the background checks. They have DFS with all hunter and safety instructors. They pay for it. So this just puts it in there, and I see no problem with this at all. So I view it as a friendly amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative, Mr. Chairman McComey.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My only concern is, does this mean that the districts are then going to have to pay for the black gown check?
Anyone else for their first time? First time? Second time? Mr. Speaker pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All I'm saying is they have to be compliant with it. Who pays for it will be up to whoever pays for the whole program. And I assume the good sponsor knows how that all works. But it just says they have to be compliant with it. It could be the Game and Fish that pays for it, or it could be the school district. But it's actually a pretty cheap little deal. I think it's $15 to do the fingerprinting. I think that's what it was.
I'm going to allow Representative Yagi to address that. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, the Game and Fish will take care of all of their certifying of their instructors. And then the school, if we had instructors that would be available to teach in school, the Game and Fish would have to certify them. So they will pay for that also. No cost to the school at all.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 71, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 71 has been adopted. Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 71 and ask for your consideration. This amendment is probably more than a belt and suspenders amendment, as we've talked about before. It goes into the new language in page 1, section H, and changes the shall to may with respect to requiring the education of this type of a hunter safety program for our schools. And members of the body, I'll tell you that many of us are advocates for the Second Amendment right under our Constitution. Many of us believe that this type of education for students is good. But also, a lot of us believe that this type of education is good for parents to give to their children, and perhaps not for the school to be providing that. So, what this amendment would do would just say if schools would like to do it, you know, they can do it. Another part of my concern here is it has to do with what we hear oftentimes about time on task in the classroom, and certainly the language here in line 6 provides an opportunity for these courses to be offered as extracurricular, but they also suggest that in line 6 they could be offered as elective courses, and so presumably the 15 or 18 hours of time that it would take if they were offered as elective courses within the school day, that would certainly take some time out from what we hear as a common criticism or classroom teachers, that they don't have enough time on task. The other concern that I have, and it came from the department official when I talked to them this morning with respect to lines 11 through 14. A course offered under this subsection shall only be open to school-aged children residing within or attending schools within the school district. And the concern came up is, could this language suggest that students of other ages could not be denied from taking these courses if they were offered in addition to the fifth and sixth grade, so you would have a mixture of the high school students in there in addition to the fifth and sixth grade is contemplated in line 2. So I raise that question to see if there's an answer. Perhaps it could be taken care of in line 3 on page 2, where it talks about the standards promulgated by the state board or rules or standards. So in fairness to the debate, I will tell you I only had the opportunity to talk to one building principal in the elementary school in my district this morning, and she was quite opposed to to what we've contemplated here in Senate File 71. And if it could be offered only as an extracurricular activity, you know, outside of the school day, you know, that would be more appealing to this particular building principal. And the other thing that I would suggest is, you know, the opportunities, this is an important aspect of youth development, I believe. And I think particularly for young males, besides learning the basics of gun safety and handling, the idea of responsibility is an attribute to the development of young men. So I really approve of this type of education, but I guess I would just suggest there are other opportunities for these types of instruction to take place outside of the school. In fact, I believe one of the fastest growing programs in the 4-H youth development program right now is gun safety and those kind of courses. So, you know, there are other opportunities to do this. So I just wanted to have an opportunity to express some of my concerns and some of the concerns of just a couple of people that I've talked to that are out on the ground and in the schools relative to the language here. So the criticism might be that if you put May in there, the school simply won't do that. And I can't deny that that might not occur, but this is a decision as to whether we want to offer these opportunities as important as I really believe they are within the scope of the school, either as the extracurricular activity or as an elected course. So I'll just be interested to hear the discussion on it, but I would somewhat, you know, I'd be a little cautious about moving this direction. I think the May language will relieve a lot of the angst over it. So with that, we'll see if there's some other convincing opinions that would change my mind and others. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Teeters, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising on and in support of the amendment, I have been apprehensively supporting this piece of legislation, and I think we have enough issues in our education system right now that I really would like to focus the bulk of our time moving forward focusing on the basics. I understand that this does have a legitimate place in some schools, but I think it should be optional, and I support the amendment.
Representative Yagi, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don't know quite where to start. As a hunter safety instructor, I do teach responsibility. I think that's probably the biggest thing that I teach in a course. So I am trying to teach kids that they do have a responsibility, and not only in a gun handling, but a responsibility to the outdoors, to wildlife, to the landowners. So I think responsibility is a big thing, and especially when you pick up a gun, I think the responsibility that goes along with that is one of the main things that I try to instill in them. And the State Department of Education, in response to talking to one principal in one school, they were there all the way through the debate in the Senate. So as this started, it was brought to the committee. The State Department, superintendent, and curriculum, some other folks were there, along with the Game and Fish Department officials. So this was drafted, and the shall was put in there with their blessing, so to speak. And if it turns into a may, I'm not sure we're really accomplishing what we want to accomplish with that. I will tell you that Wyoming has the largest number of guns per household in the United States. It's up to something like 9.2. That means you guys that don't have any, somebody else has one or two more, but 9.2 guns per household. And I think it needs to be, it's a safety issue, especially with another bill that I'm bringing up maybe today, tomorrow, the next day, where you're able to carry a gun. And I think this safety issue is one of the big things, and by leaving it a May, we're saying, well, I guess if we have time. This is a safety issue, and I think the Department of Education, the Game and Fish, and the folks that I've talked to, superintendents, they're thinking that this is just a good thing. So I'm not really excited, of course, about changing the shall to may. And I just wanted to let you know that the State Department had been in on the whole planning of this. This isn't just the bringer of the bill and myself sat down and decide this. This was concocted with the help of the State Department of Education and the officials of the Game and Fish. So I would urge you to resist the shall to may and leave it in as it is. Thank you.
Mr. Minority, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking on and for the amendment, I do agree with my good colleague from House District Number 1. First of all, speaking to the change in language from requiring to authorizing, we are basically creating an opportunity for our school districts to utilize their creativity in providing this type of responsible and including the safety portion of handling firearms to our young people. And then secondly, from shall to may, we are not mandating that you shall, Big Brother telling a local district you will or you shall. We are saying we are creating this opportunity for you. Use your best judgment. Accordingly, many of us have that culture. We have that hunting culture in our school district. So on and for the amendment.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for second reading amendment number 2. Ladies and gentlemen, when I was reading this, I was remembering a lot of the good discussions we had when we were building our Hathaway program and the success curriculum. And a lot of those discussions I remember are, what is the purpose of elementary school? And, of course, what is the purpose of high school? Now, when we look at that, the answer to that question is what are we doing in high school? We're trying to prepare our kids for high school. To further answer that question, are we doing a good job in elementary school preparing our kids for high school? And the answer to that question today is yes. We're doing a great job because we're doing a focused approach to that. We know what standards that have to be met. Slightly related to this amendment, you know, when we get to high school, then we're putting our kids on different tracks. We're trying to prepare them perhaps for career, for higher education, for real world, real life settings. And I would maintain that without this change, the second reading amendment to this bill, I think we will further complicate our purpose of elementary school and create scheduling conflicts that would then require what could only be called remedial help for our students when they get to high school. They may not be prepared for high school because of scheduling conflicts that they just won't get the base needed when they advance into high school. And again, on in support of second reading amendment.
Else for their first time, Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment. Keep in mind that the bill, as drafted, doesn't require the schools to have to use any of their time. It just requires them to make the course available. They can make it available after hours with an instructor from the Game and Fish, so it doesn't eat into any school time. But what bothers me about the change is I think it takes us in a really dangerous direction and sets a really dangerous precedent. And that's because right now I can't find anything in the statutes that would prevent a school from offering this right now. So by saying that they may offer it, it doesn't really change anything. Unless you want to look at it as now we they have to get permission from us for what courses that they're going to take. What are we going to do next? Run bills that say schools may offer football, schools may offer basketball, schools may offer art class, schools may offer geography, and suddenly a school wants to offer a course that we haven't given them the permission to offer by saying that they may offer it, so now are they not allowed to offer it? If you don't like the bill and you don't want to require the schools to offer the course, then vote against the bill. But by changing the shall to a may, all we're doing is setting the precedent that the schools have to come to us to offer anything before they can offer it. So on and against the amendment.
Representative Wanister Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, I look at this as being very onerous for the school districts and the fact that they are required to handle firearms, and in statutes now you're not able to bring firearms onto school district property. So in my mind, to make these courses work, we're going to have to be busing kids off of school grounds onto some location where they can teach them the fundamentals. And in some of our bigger cities, it looks to me like it's very onerous. On some of the country schools, it may not be so bad. You can walk off the school property and present that program. But so you have a little conflict there of being able to bring firearms onto school property and conduct this education. So for the amendment.
Representative Harshman, first time.
Thank you. I'm glad, one thing, I'm above the average of 9.2. That's good to know. And actually quite proud of that, and I've taken my kids through the hunter safety process, and I'm old enough I didn't have to, I guess. But I think the key things that have been said with this, and I'm in support of the amendment, is it's about an opportunity. And, you know, and I think it – and then it allows our 48 districts to actually serve their customers. They're not wards of the state. We're not the state school board sitting in there. And when we – command a shall, then we've turned this into part of Title 21, where we do command they shall teach English, arts, vocations, all those other things, because we know those things are important. And now we add one more, and we can do it. I mean, it's being done in many schools. In my school, for second largest school in the state, we have the second oldest ROTC unit, junior ROTC unit in the United States, second only behind the one here in Cheyenne, but they're taught and they're using rifles every day. And that's a thing that serves our community. But that might not be the right thing for, you know, another school in the state. And I don't think it's our deal to sit down here and say the shall thing on these particular things. And I guess the last thing, our schools can do anything you want. We'll do anything you want. But I don't think we can do everything. And I think it's what do we really want to focus on? And to say that these could be after school and extracurricular, sure they can. But there's a lot of other things going on after school. There's early bird reading going on every school now before school today in this state. There'll be after school programs and music, all those things. And let's just let the districts have an opportunity, if they want to serve their customers. But to command that, I think, has gone a little too far. So on and for the amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time, Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wow, I didn't think this would be that hard to get. I taught it in school, and I'm telling you, I was a solid teacher, a core class teacher, taught biology, anatomy, physiology. In an elective class, I brought this in, and it wasn't that big a deal. I'm all for teaching the basics. And to say that this is going to cut away from the basics, I'm not sure. The handling of the guns, right now we have some laser guns that, you know, you pull a trigger and the laser is going to go off. So there are those there now. And there will not be any guns in the schools. But right now what we do for our shooting is we go on a Saturday anyway. We take our young hunters, well, the hunter applicants, hunter safety applicants, we go out and shoot on a different day anyway. So I don't think that's really the problem. I don't think this is that onerous. And, man, if we were just cutting out all the math, science, and English, I'd say, wow, let's not include hunter safety, but as an elective, 12-hour class, I think it's being painted a little bit, it's going to dominate and take over. And by the way, when the coach came up to talk, I said, are you for or against? He says, oh, I'm for the amendment. I said, then you can't talk, but he's bigger than me. So he just put, I happen to have over the 9.2 guns in my house and kind of enjoy them. But I think this amendment right now is something that we just need to look at. I think it guts the bill. If that's the purpose you want to do, go ahead and vote for it. We do have third reading, and I'll be back, I guess. But I would suggest that you resist this, vote against this amendment. Let's leave the bill as it came out of the Senate. A lot of thought, a lot of discussion with our education folks, with the game and fish folks, and I think we ought to just leave it at that. So thanks for the discussion and your consideration.
Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I can't tell you again how much I endorse these types of programs. And the word opportunity seemed to be used two or three times in this debate. So I would also call out that this amendment really, it doesn't do anything to affect the opportunity for people within a school district to go to their school district and advocate that they implement these programs if they want to do it. It allows some local input into what they would like to see taught in the school, but it doesn't make it mandatory. And I just have a little bit of a problem to say that one size fits all with this type of a proposal. So, Mr. Speaker, at this point, I'd call for the question on the amendment. Thank you.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 71, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
All those in favor, please stand. The amendment is adopted. Senate File 71 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We'll take a quick break for some privilege of the floor. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's with great honor that I introduce for you in the South Gallery this morning the third grade class of Bighorn Elementary, my district, and their teachers and parents, and the Teacher of the Year, Mrs. Laurie Graves. Please welcome them to the gallery. They barely wiggled while we were going through that discussion. But I think it's appropriate that they could hear that we're discussing school and education and that we've been doing it all session. So thank you very much for your service, and thank you for being here. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 88.
Senate File 88, introduced by Senator Burns, an act relating to crimes and punishment regarding expungement of nonviolent felonies.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1. We dealt with this bill yesterday. There was a really good committee of the whole amendment that added quite a few different offenses. I just needed to add two more. One was 64402B. You'll see there on their amendment that letter M. That's incest. For whatever reason, incest is actually not included where you find all the sexual assault statutes. It's in a different little section. So I brought that in. And that N, which is that 64405, that's if you are giving methamphetamine to a child. That's what that one is. So I added those two in. And then the rest of it is, you see where it says delete the standing committee amendment, delete 30, insert 90. The standing committee amendment took it to 60. All I want to do is take it to 90. And what that's dealing with is, so the person applies to have their expungement. So they've served their sentence, they've served their parole, 10 years has elapsed since the last day of parole. They then submit their application. The prosecutor then has to file a document, whether or not it's okay or whether or not they're objecting and they want a hearing. The problem is, and the prosecutor may not actually have any files, but the clerk of the district court by law maintains all files. But what happens in a lot of the clerks of the district court, just simply because they don't have enough space, those get boxed up. And I thought it was 10 years, but someone told me it was more than that. But so they're on some type of schedule where a file that is so many years old gets boxed up and shipped to Cheyenne to archives. I've had to do this once or twice where I've had to try and get a file back for a case that's old. And no fault of archives. They're doing a great job. But it just takes a while just to find what you're looking for, put it in the mail, mail it back. And then once you get it, you still have to review it. And there may be actually something in the file that makes you, you know, stir some other thought and you need to call someone and verify something. So it just seemed to be appropriate that there was a 90-day window to allow that prosecutor a little bit more time to look into it. You know, in my mind, you know, the person's already served a sentence, earned a parole. 10 years has elapsed since the last day of parole. I don't think it's asking a lot more just to add 30 more days from the 60 to the 90.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I cannot imagine a more friendly amendment. I'd urge your adoption.
Anyone else? First time, second time, all those in favor of second reading amendment number one to Senate File 88, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one to Senate File 88 has been adopted. Senate File 88 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 89.
Senate File 89, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to adult protective services.
Senate File 89 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 101.
Senate File 101, introduced by Senator Coe, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program.
Senate File 101 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 108.
Senate File 108, introduced by Senator Burns, an act relating to banks and banking remote electronic terminals.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry I was enthralled in the previous discussion. I bring to you second, I'd like to move the second reading amendment number one. And basically, this is a very simple change. It reduces that proposed fee down to $1.50. My colleagues in the House, this is a very simple choice today. You can either vote for the constituents and the residents who sent you here, or you can vote for the bankers and the people who own these things. And that's pretty much the way it stands. So I stand for questions. Thank you.
Sounds familiar. For your first time, Representative Greer.
Mr. Speaker, yes, it's. I think that's well said. I guess we just have that decision to make. This, the amendment obviously takes it from completely away from the purpose of the bill, and I would just save time and encourage you to vote no on the amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time, second time? All those in favor of second reading amendment number one to Senate File 108, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Second reading amendment number one to Senate File 108 has failed. Senate File 108, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 150.
Senate File 150, introduced by Senator Nicholas, an act relating to notaries.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number one to Senate File 150. What this amendment, if you turn to page 2 of the bill, simply removes Romanette 3 and 4 at the bottom of the page. My concern with that language is we were imposing, or it appeared to me we were imposing quite a burden on the notarial officer. And the fact is, in Romanette 3, is we're really putting a burden on that person whose job is to just verify your signature, that you are the person that signed that document. You are putting a burden on them to determine, to some degree, which is not quite clear, that that person understands what they're signing. And maybe that's a good job for attorneys and bankers, but not really a good job for someone receiving a statutorily limited fee of $2. So I'll just be brief. I'm trying to pull those out. I encourage you to vote yes for the amendment. Pull those out of a bill that I really do think has some merit in other places.
For the first time, Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a really good amendment. And actually, I'll just let you know now, all the amendments you're going to see are all good amendments. Everyone had some really good input yesterday, and they did some nice things to the bill to make it better, and I'd urge you to vote aye on this amendment.
Although, Representative Brown, for your first time, all those in favor of a second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 150, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 150 has passed. Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 150. Ladies and gentlemen, if an attorney, we're on page 6 at line 3, and that basically says that, I want to get it straight here, a notarial officer is disqualified from performing a notarial act if that officer, and then it runs through a number of them and it gets, it starts at line 24 on page 5, avoidance of influence. And then this part A says, while acting as a notarial officer, that officer shall not influence a person either to sign or not to sign. I am a notary public, and I ask all the attorneys in my office to be notary publics for one simple reason, and that is the deathbed situation. And we have more than once been called from our office, would you come to the hospital? We have someone who's on their deathbed. They want to make a change in their will. They want to make a will. They need to sign a health care power of attorney. Who knows what it is? And I've just done the notary thing as a safety precaution, that if it gets to the point there's an instrument to be signed and there's nobody else around, rather than have the instrument be void for failure to be notarized, that I could notarize it. I do it very reluctantly. I think all attorneys do. But that would be a situation that would be barred as the statute or as the bill reads. And so I put this in here, and I would tell you this. If an attorney exercises that influence improperly, they're in a lot worse and deeper trouble than this bill is going to put them in. And so I think there are adequate safeguards there. I think there's all kinds of disciplinary and professional responsibility that an attorney has to respond to. And I put the amendment in so that in that deathbed situation or some similar situation, if the person says, well, I want to do this, the attorney says, I've drafted this instrument, it does what you want, they sign it. There's nobody else there, and the attorney could notarize it. And as the bill reads, I don't think they could. So I'd ask your favorable consideration for the amendment.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of this amendment, and I'd like to explain my rationale. Some years ago, there was a political campaign in which I was very interested. And one of the candidates for the suit put down as their qualifications notary public, and I thought that was very impressive at the time. And now that we've gone through this for the last couple of days on the importance of this, I give it higher esteem than I did years ago when I thought it wasn't much of a qualification. So I urge your support of the amendment.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would encourage you to vote aye on this amendment.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 150, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Representative Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 150 and ask for its favorable consideration. I brought up some of these points yesterday, but what this amendment does is delete all of 3426202 on page 5, which is the disqualification category. It basically just lets be a notary, even if you do get some type of commission fee or a title. What I believe this does is really help some small businesses, especially with some title work, if, they don't have to go find another notary if it's on a weekend or late at night. Or it just, in my mind, really helps small businesses in this state when they may only have one or two notaries in a town that they can find, and allows a little less regulation, more flexibility. And I haven't heard that there have been any problems in this area in the last 20 years.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, this is a good amendment, and I urge you to vote aye.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 150, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 4. This is the issue that the good chairman of appropriations raised yesterday. She was concerned there was a conflict in that there was a section in there that talked about confirmation by phone, and then later in the bill it talked a lot about personally appearing. So this one actually took me longer to find the fix for it, because I had to balance between what the chairman of appropriations on the Senate side wanted as to what the chairman of the appropriations on the House side wanted, which is always a fun balance. Worked on this, and what I ended up doing, and I know it says there on line 7 of the amendment, says delete the Greer amendment. We're not actually deleting what he did. He had restructuring it. He had an or and a semicolon, and I needed to put a period there. So the intent of what he was doing on that first amendment is still there, just the restructuring of it. Because what I did was delete out all that stuff about confirming through a telephone conference, and instead left in personally appear throughout the bill, but then back in the definitions, define what personally appear is. And personally appear can mean either two things. The principal is in the notarial officer's presence at the time, or the principal confirmed to the notarial officer that they signed it. And that confirmation can be through the phone if they wanted it to be. So that's how I fixed that issue, and hopefully that is a good fix.
Anyone else for their first time, second time? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 150, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 150 is adopted. Senate File 150 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Representative Harshman.
Mr. Speaker, a short privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My wife and I have been blessed with 4 children. That's why I was late today. I went home for my little guy's 12th birthday, Jess. But anyway, my oldest daughter's here today. She's a sophomore at the University of Wyoming. I had to pick up some of her stuff at home last night, and she started coming here as a 6th grader. My, how time flies. She's a sophomore at the university. Please welcome my oldest daughter, Sarah.
We're at that order of business, bills on third reading and final passage. The first and only bill for our consideration is House Bill 1.
House Bill 1, introduced by the Appropriation Committee, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of general government, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move third reading amendment number 8 to House Bill 1 and urge your favorable consideration. As you'll see, ladies and gentlemen, this does not carry an appropriation with it, but all it does is instruct the Secretary of State's office to do some reconstruction of the campaign finance information system to create a more user-friendly interface based on the feedback that they got during the 2010 campaign season. And anyway, I think the reasons for it is obvious. If you were on that thing, you know there was problems with passwords changing and suddenly expiring and suddenly not being accepted. There was problems entering data, and after you got the data entered, there was problems accepting the data. And I even got a lot of complaints about accessibility for others who were not candidates, but they just wanted to see what was on it, just out of curiosity, I guess. And I talked to statewide candidates, and their problems were monumental, too. They ended up having to hire or have staff dedicated simply to manage this thing. And, you know, the staff did a good job. Everybody got on a first-name basis with them, I'm sure. And they spent whatever time they had to with candidates. But, you know, that's just another reason for this amendment, that they shouldn't have had to do that. It was an onerous task for their on their part. It was work that they couldn't have anticipated. And all I'm saying here is that by February 1 next year, they have a more user-friendly interface and that they'll be available during the budget session to get some orientation on the thing when we come back here a year from now. So that's all the amendment does, and I'd urge your support. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, would you come up and represent Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I likewise support the amendment. Fellow representatives, you think back to the campaign that you had, the process you went through. You had mandatory reporting requirements in the primary as well as in the general as to what had to be done, because if you didn't, there were various punitive measures that could be taken on it. And I likewise support this because we spent many, many, many minutes, maybe hours, on the phones back and forth. The password would expire. We'd have to have clarification and communication. And after it was all said and done, we left with perhaps not an assurance that what we were recording was properly done. And perhaps the old system that we had, I'm not saying we should revert back to that, but we certainly need training. It needs to be more user-friendly, and I heard numerous comments from other individuals saying that this was something that was dreaded, and I certainly did, and I would definitely support this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else? Second time? All those in favor of third reading amendment number 8 to House Bill 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. We are on third reading amendment number 16 to House Bill 1. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move third reading amendment number 16 to House Bill 1, and I would ask for your favorable consideration. We have had a lot of discussion this year, mostly in our good committee number 9, about delays in permitting from our environmental agency. And also, we even had a bill to that effect to maybe force them to speed up permitting, which is no longer alive on the other side of the building. The bottom line is that the DEQ needs permanent resources to catch up with their permitting. And of course, we are talking, and these would be land quality positions, is my understanding, to deal with the increased uranium development, increased coal development. There was some discussion that perhaps other folks from air or water quality could be moved to land quality. However, we're about to have an oil boom here in southeastern Wyoming, which requires air quality permitting, water quality permitting. We just passed the bug bill, which would involve DEQ as well. So what this amendment does is to get the agency going with two fill-time positions. They thought they were going to get four, but those were eliminated. So just to get them two to start developing internal resources. And the funding for this first year for the two positions would come out of the $1.5 million that is already appropriated. Part of that money is intended to be used for contract employees who could help them get caught up with the backlog. But it's very difficult in the environmental agency to rely, you can't rely permanently on contract employees because these folks serve a regulatory function. And the contractors in the environmental field tend to be folks who work for environmental groups, who folks who work for industry. So finding people who don't have a conflict to work for DEQ, you can just do it on discrete projects, but you certainly can't do it over the long term. So this amendment adds two positions, so DEQ can develop the capacity to deal with this increased workload. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of this amendment, and most of you know I'm fairly conservative in my approach to everything, but this is one that fills a need that was vetted for over a year in the Minerals Committee hearings that we had through. There is need for additional people. There was a belief that two of these people would come out of one of these B1 transfers. That did not happen, and so the expectation that was driven by a very aggressive study of how the DEQ could process materials quicker for their results and for the results of the industries that we have in this state could be met. We needed additional people in there, and I'd urge your support of this. Proposed amendment.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising on and against the amendment, we took considerable testimony from the DEQ, and one of the things that we asked, and one of the things that I asked, was what are they shifting positions around, and they are, was the answer. They have shifted people from certain divisions to other divisions, and the director actually even used the statement, overstaffing. When we're overstaffed here, we move people here. I think there are systemic issues within the DEQ that need to be investigated, and certainly in my position on your committee number two, it's something that I would like to see happen going forward because there are issues. Why are we having overstaffing here? Why are we moving people and then saying, oop, we're short over here? Don't mind the fact that we've got more over there. I would also remind the body that we've included $1.5 million to handle this backlog. We are being generous. The governor was very generous with the DEQ. So I would rise and ask you to please say no. Let's let the backlog get caught up, and then let's let them come to us and actually then justify at that point when they are back at an even ground what they need going forward. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Kind of funny for me to be up here telling you to hire some more state employees, but in this case, they're needed. This is in a department that oversees our tax revenue generating industries here in Wyoming. You know, in my career, we use lots of consultants through the years. To tell you the truth, I don't like using consultants. I rather hire people full time. Either you need them or you don't need them. Then they're more, they tell you the truth more about what's going on. And I think it's probably the same way within the DEQ. Hiring non-biased people is difficult. We work with great people in the DEQ, and we work with some unruly people in the DEQ. You know, just like in any industry. You know, people here on the floor, some of you are ornery and some of you are great. I don't know where I stand, but but anyway, on and for the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Kasprick.
Mr. Speaker, on and for the amendment. We heard considerable testimony in minerals, business, and economic development, and they were comfortable with the direction they were going on, and that was based on the addition of 4 new personnel to address the backlog of mining permits. From 2010 until current, they have a backlog of 450 permits. This is stifling progression in our mineral industries, and they need to have the opportunity to have the people in place to clear this backlog and also to currently be ready to take care of all of the new permits that are going to be coming through with new production. Thank you.
Representative Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on and for the amendment, you know, we went through this with the coalbed methane play, shortage of DEQ employees, and we're going through it again. And this is one that I don't see an end to it. I mean, coalbed methane play was a large play, but this is even larger, what's going on around here. And I really think that the DEQ needs these positions to take care of that and to take care of future plays. So on and for the amendment.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against this amendment, just so people know what type of person I really am.
Senator Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am on and against the amendment. Memory serves me correct, and I'm sure that the good sponsors of the amendment and those have spoken for. It seems to me, since I've been in this body for going on 7 years now, that more than once we have provided additional FTEs to this department to bring the backlog, to allow them to get their permitting backlog up to speed. So I guess to them I would like to know how many additional personnel over the years have we added, and where the backlog, I think at one point in time, was caught up when we weren't issuing so many permits due to the federal government not being prompt and how they were dealing with us. So where are those people now? So I'd just like someone to respond to that question. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For first time, Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Not really great, not really that ornery. I would just speak to just for some facts on this. Number one is obviously we took testimony that says they have a backlog, and obviously we thought that it was worth funding at a level of $1.5 million. And the two things I just want to point out to the body, because this is your bill that we're going to pass out of here, and this is the decision to make. One is that these two positions come from the 1.5, so this actually is not a net increase. The one thing that you need to make sure that we understand, though, is that it's two people going forward who may work for the state 20 years that then we have to assign salary, benefits, insurance, and all those other pieces to. So the 1.5 won't cover them for their entire time. See, once they're hired, then we have to go through the release point and that. But it is not a net increase, and we clearly see that it has to be addressed. But there is some longer-term funding issues associated with this that I just want the body to be aware of. And not ornery and not great.
Your first time. Representative Juan Serdan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I was sitting here in favor of the amendment, and I was sitting here thinking about it, you may actually save money. If we're going to be contracting these people, I mean, if we hire them as actual state employees, if they come under the state classification rules, you can assign them, you know, the same salary that everybody else is getting. And these are kind of specialized positions. They're dealing with what we heard in committee is they're dealing with uranium, some other permitting backlogs. And so, you know, there's not a lot of people, I would argue, that they can do this kind of work. And I would say it's probably easier and cheaper for us to make them state employees for the next year, assign them those classifications, salaries, benefits, in line with all of our other A&I classification system, and we actually might save money on doing it this way. Thank you.
Representative Roscoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Body, being on the Minerals Committee, there's a lot of new rising in favor of the amendment. There's a lot of new industries new techniques coming through for our mining, such as the things we passed this session, the microbial conversion and some natural gas storage. And I think we need these. DEQ needs to be increased so we can get these industries moving. And I think that the resources, the revenues from these industries will more than pay for the amendment. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm glad to hear that the Appropriations Committee funded money for this. However, all this does is authorize positions to be able to use some of that money with, because these people just aren't fooling around out there, and we have been reducing positions. So I don't know. I think maybe this does authorize the positions to use some of that money with.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just to comment on that, we did, as you know, eliminate 244 positions that we had vacant, which is now currently in your budget. So that is part of the reason for this coming back. And then the other comment that I would make is that these positions would have to come back in an exception budget, back in as an exception when they come back to build the budget for 13-14. And that was part of their testimony, too, was about having staff that was giving them the direct information. But it's the will of the body on the two positions.
Anyone else for their first time? First time. Second time. Second time, Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, even though the coal bed methane play may have cut back some from the activity as far as drilling, it didn't shut down the work needed for the DEQ. And also, any of the mining operations going on now, I call it oil and gas, but it includes mining, they need those additional positions. As I said earlier, it's an unprecedented growth in this industry, the mining industry, and with regulations being dictated by the federal government, there's additional work required for the Department of Environmental Quality, and they need the additional people. On and for the amendment.
Second time, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, we've added a few people a number of years ago. We need to add some more people. You look at the revenue being generated in Wyoming over the last 10 years. It's gone up two or threefold. There's regulations that are in place that have to be enforced. These are some of the folks that enforce them. But there's another aspect of this that I think that's extraordinarily important, is these are our employees, the state of Wyoming employees. And they also push back with some of the Fed regulations coming down and the Fed enforcement, the EPA, if we can name those agencies. There's a number of them. So these folks are doing the job. They understand the importance of minerals to Wyoming. They make industry do it right. And so we need a couple more to get the job done, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart, second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To quote a former legislator from Fort Laramie, this is a really good amendment. I'd urge your support.
Second time prior to sponsor, Representative Zwanzerdan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just some quick other information that I didn't think about until just now. Because my family does the oil and gas lease auctions, we talked a lot about the backlog now, but I would expect, I hadn't heard that people are going to say the backlog is going to continue to get worse the way we're going. We just sold $150 million the last year in leases on state properties. And so just encourage the testimony that this might not even solve the problem, or the problem may continue to exacerbate. Thanks.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's not a lot more I need to add, but I'm not sure we answered the good chairman of transportation's questions. The positions that we created before, I believe, were for the coal bed methane play, which has slowed, but there's still enforcement. Air quality will get busy with oil and gas play. Also, if they have any big facilities come in, which we certainly hope they do, those are complicated. Plus, you can't always just move people from agency to agency. Air quality is a specialty. Land quality is a specialty. Water quality is a specialty. They do share many skills. but they're not exactly always transferable. I would appreciate your support on this amendment, and thank you for the good discussion.
All those in favor of third reading amendment number 16 to House Bill 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment 16 to House Bill 1 has been adopted. We are on third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 1. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 1. What this does is there's a budget footnote on page 27 of the budget that says, for reimbursement rates for nursing facility services, no cost of living adjustments nor other increase in rates not authorized by statute shall be provided in the 2011-12 fiscal biennium without specific legislative action approving the increase. What this does is removes the footnote. It doesn't add any additional dollars, but requires the Department of Health to reprioritize the dollars if they want to rebase the rates. For nursing homes, we've got some nursing homes that are in critical trouble in smaller communities, well, all over the state, frankly. This will allow the Department of Health to reallocate existing dollars to support those nursing homes. I'd urge your consideration.
Anyone else for their first time, second time? All those in favor of third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 1 has been adopted. We're on third reading amendment number 13. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Amendment 13 to House Bill 1, third reading Amendment 13 to House Bill 1, and I'll defer to the good chairman from Labor to explain the $15 million.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you'll look on your desk, you have a two-sided handout. And it talks about Wyoming Department of Health calculation of general fund shortfall. The Appropriations Committee, in their wisdom, and I'm not saying that facetiously, removed some money from the contingency fund that we have parked in the auditor's office. But they added some in. If you look at your budget bill on page 25, line 15, the health care financing, they did add some in at that time, but what they did was empty the contingency fund. And this amendment would, instead of $25 million in that contingency fund, it would add $21 million, excuse me, it would add $15 million into that contingency fund. Just park it there to be used only in necessary emergencies. And I guess this is kind of an odd, I did not intend to bring any budget amendments. And in fact, have spoken against some. But the fact that we do have new folks that are in charge and that remodeling of this agency is in progress, they want a little bit of a surety that this will be, that the money will be there in that emergency for things that they have not planned for. I can tell you in dealing with Department of Health, sometimes you ask for a specific number and they come to you with one, and then the next time you meet, the number is a different number. It is confusing. It is hard to do. It is difficult. And I just would say, let's give the new kid a chance and give him the reserves that he needs to be able to make the budget work for this coming year.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ever so gently push back on this and kind of give everybody a view from 32,000 feet of the testimony that was taken in JAC, what the numbers are, what the goal was, and where we are right now. And this is kind of a look at how it all came together. Originally, we had in our budget, it was $438.2 million is what we had put in health care financing, and that was in the original budget bill. And then what happened was the department came back and requested $91 million. The governor reading the numbers, came in and said, what we'll do is he felt that 68 million was the target number. Now, of this, there was a $21 million carryover. This is where some of this is coming from, and I want to talk a little bit about that. There's a $21 million carryover of a loss of really expenditures that weren't covered from 2009 and 10. And so what we did was took a look at, and that's also made up in the original GovSrec. So what we did is we took the GovSrec of 68 million, and this is how we got to where we are. We added $43 million, which I would also tell you is a 10% increase in the total that we appropriated. But also, if you look in your session law from last session in the Section 306 budget, we appropriated $25 million for the purpose of preserving a reserve for the Medicaid programs to the auditor's office, $16 million of which could only be accessed with legislative approval, $9 million of which could be accessed with the governor's approval. So what we did is we took action to say, okay, now you have access to the full 25 in addition to the 43, which adds up to the GovSrec of $68 million. And we chose not to keep anything in the auditor's office as an excess, based on a discussion that we had that, okay, we're putting all these pieces over here, and whatever we put is what we put in the auditor's office exactly equivalent to what we did plus that? I mean, is that our total appropriation? Is that the way that it works? Because that's generally what the burn rate equals. But it also came to a point that now we're playing a shell game, and we're putting funds here and funds there, and what we need to do is be honest with what we're doing. We need to say, if we're going to appropriate into the 048 budget, and we believe this is the burn rate, then that's what we'll put in. And when we're wrong, we can come back. And I'll tell you, 6 months after this, what we do here, what we vote on today, 6 months after that, we come back again. And that is still 6 months of funding left in what we're doing. So if they've already burnt 6 or 4 months ahead of time, then we've got a real issue. But we're nowhere near the point of a special session. Then we come back and we say, all right, we're over by 10, 11, 12 million. And really the 21 million probably in testimony in December was probably closer to 14 million from the 09-010 budget. And so always says this also creates transparency. So that's why we didn't keep it there. We kept it in the LSRA. And we said, if we are over, if this is truly something that we need to fund, then let's not have this shell game. We commit that this is something that we've committed to pay as a state. So we'll just take it out of this budget. But the $68 million that we appropriated already is exactly what the GovSrec was. And if it goes, if we go and we track over, our commitment, JAC, was to say, okay, if you're over 10 or 15, then when we get back here in February, we'll do it at that point. But we didn't want to put it out there because then that just equals what the total appropriation is. Whatever's there is the appropriation plus that. What it becomes is, as you start to do this, you got your general fund plus one, and then if we do the LSRA, then we got general fund plus one plus two. So all we want to do is have one savings account for all of these issues, all of these things that are going to be coming up with us as a body. And that was the goal. The goal was never, and I want to make this clear, the goal was to never cut the budget. The goal was just to create a transparency issue that says, hey, you said here, if we get back and it's over, then it's 6 months. We have six more months in the biennium, and I doubt we'll be over at that point. We can take action in February to shore up the remaining 4 months if we do an effective immediately. And that was the point. It was never to cut rates. It was never to cut provider rates. It was never to draw on the department. We recognize that this is our commitment to fully fund. We just wanted to do it in a way that's the most transparent, and that's why I am not hot on the amendment.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising on and against the amendment, and I've been privy to some of these conversations. I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that Medicaid is going to be the thing that bleeds this state dry. And in my opinion, as we move forward, instead of pumping more blood into the patient who is dying on the table, we need to have some surgery and fix the problem. We have a new administration downstairs and a new director across the street, and This is not the answer. The answer is we need to dig deep. We need to figure out what some of the inherent problems are. I'm not saying that we're going to be able to fix all of our problems in administration of this program, but you cannot look at me with a square face and tell me that we can't do a better job of controlling some of these costs. As the last speaker spoke, he was absolutely dead on. Even in a worst-case scenario, we're going to be back 6 months before this biennial budget runs dry. We'll have an opportunity next session to backfill any major overruns, and the opportunity for us to do that will be there then. We'll have a better idea of where we're at on the Craig, with how much surplus we'll have. For us to take another $15 million out of the general fund is premature, in my opinion, and I would urge you to vote no on the amendment.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I remember rising on this issue and asking questions when we were on the first reading. And I was concerned then that $69 million reduced to $25 million, and some of that could only be spent with legislative approval, would bring us back to a special session. The explanation that was just given to me by the gentleman from the city in which I am now standing explain a little bit of the history, but it still doesn't ease my concern. You know, the good speaker just before me talked about, well, we've got a patient that's dying on the table, and we're out there to try and find a way to fix it. But that patient's probably going to need a transfusion to stay alive long enough so we can fix it. And my concern is, I would just as soon, whether we park money in the legislative services spending account or whether we park it here. And let's hope that it doesn't get used. But I would certainly rather have this money here that we're putting aside, $15 million here, than switch it off over someplace else and not adequately fund this. Costs have risen between 19 and 22% in health care this last year. And we're seeing it on our premiums and everything else. Rising in support of this amendment, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Minority, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking for the amendment and speaking for the patient and a blood transfusion, I would have some concern because the $21 million that we're carrying forward is a deficit. And the $15 million, I believe, addresses not the entire deficit. We're going to carry forward some deficit here. So I believe that this is probably a stopgap measure, but I do believe we need to address this fully.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising up and exercising caution on this, urging your no vote on this. Ladies and gentlemen, the Republic is safe here. We've run the numbers on this, and the bottom line is, and we actually had some testimony this morning. All of us are very concerned about this. We don't want to shortchange our citizens or our Department of Health on this, and we have run the numbers, even though gambling's not legal. We've run the numbers on this, and we're good. What we heard this morning in testimony in Appropriations Committee is that we have parked enough money to adequately fund Medicaid until we come back next year. That was in answer to a specific question. And the answer was yes, we're okay. Believe me, when we're in a supplemental budget, one of the first questions we ask for a budget request is, you know, this isn't a budget session. What do you really need to get through the year so we can come back and have a meaningful discussion and take testimony when we're looking at the whole budget? And we approach this in light of those types of discussions when looking at how we could adequately fund this agency. And by no means was the intention to shortchange Medicaid, and I can assure you, as recently as today, we're good. Thank you.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. for this conversation about Medicaid and really the reason for bringing this amendment. Of course, it came late last night, and I just wanted it a placeholder there so that we could have a discussion. We do have a serious issue on our hands. As you've heard, we are remodeling this whole program or an attempt at it. And this morning we did have that opportunity in appropriations to actually have the CFO for the Department of Health with Medicaid there in appropriations and had that opportunity to discuss where we are today on Medicaid. And so I wish I would have had that information prior to put this amendment in. We have an amendment later that I think will be a good amendment, which is clearing out the funding that's in the auditor's account and moving that into the Medicaid account to take care of that shortfall, and the remaining will be used as needed in this budget. A couple of pieces of information that we learned today was that there are currently 500 fewer individuals on eligibility or in enrollment than there was in December. The numbers currently are at 67,600. What's important to know that part of the escalating in the cost here of Medicaid had to do with our unemployment rate. A calendar year ago, it was at 6.5. It's currently at 5.5. But realize that in 2009, it was at 2.3. So that's part of the reason that there's been such a painful growth in this account. I think that we cleared up this morning in appropriations the shortfall for 9-10 moving in, taking care of those adjustments that we've currently made in the JAC budget. And yes, could there be a shortfall in June of 2012? There is a possibility. But I would hope by the time we get there, we have gotten things straightened out and really have a cost containment in place and that we're working with it. One of the little pieces that's difficult for many of us to understand is that the Central Medicaid Service Office that dictates our rates, you have to have those in by July 1st. And then that lasts for a calendar year. So that's one of the things that the agency has to work with in trying to define what will be the cost, how many people will be eligible, and on that. So at this time, I see that we could have a problem, but we did also verify that we should be able to adjust to those needs when we come back for the fiscal budget process of 13-14. So with that, I would ask you to resist this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time, second time prior to the sponsor? All those in favor of third reading amendment number 13 to House Bill 1, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 13 to House Bill 1 has failed. Chairman Berger.
You know, you've just made my heart feel good that you listened to me. Thank you so much. Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
It gives me great pleasure to introduce the second part of Bighorn Elementary School with their teacher, Marcia McChesney. Hello, Bighorn, and welcome to the House. These are our future leaders, third graders.
Do they include the West Gallery, too? Who are these kids here? Does anybody want to do a privilege of the floor?
You're all from Bighorn, too, over there, or are you from another school? Well, we like Natrona, too. Representative Harshman? You know, I don't get a lot of company, so, Mr. Speaker, I'll take you, too.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Right on. Folks, this is an outstanding group from Manor Heights Elementary School, and they're located at, that's 15th Street, isn't it? They don't call me sir, but no, thank you. And really just one of our top elementary schools, and really our elementary schools are doing a fantastic job in Casper, and it's really the work of these folks and all these beautiful kids. So welcome to the House. Thank you.
We're on third reading amendment number 17 to House Bill 1. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 17 to House Bill 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, we've just had the discussion on the Medicaid issue, and what this is doing is taking the $25 million that we have in the auditor's office and moving it over to the Medicaid account in the Department of Health, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration. Exactly, Mr. Speaker, it is net. It's just no increase, no decrease. It's just moving it.
I'm sorry. All those in favor? Oh, I apologize. No, go ahead, Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Chairman, I was just here to say that's great, and that this is when I spoke about that Section 306, that this is that $25 million that we have access to, the $16 million with legislative approval, and then $9 million with the governor's approval. This is in direct reference to that. That all this does is sweep it into the 048 budget out of the auditors, which is what it should do. So I thank the good chairman for bringing the amendment.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, thank the good chair lady for bringing the amendment. I think this is the way to do this. So we put this in some reserve account. I mean, this is upfront, calling it what it is, and appreciate the amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time, second time? All those in favor of third reading amendment number 17 to House Bill 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 17 to House Bill 1 has been adopted. We are on third reading amendment number 15 to House Bill 1. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring you third reading amendment number 15 to House Bill 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. In the absence of our good colleague from my part of the state and this issue that's near and dear to her heart, she was planning to bring this amendment, so I am bringing it in her place. What this does, this is different from the one you saw before related to the developmental disability waivers. That one asked for a 4% restoration. This one asks for a 2% restoration to the funding. The basic premise behind this is that the decreases in Medicaid support of our developmental disabilities waivers and nursing home services leaves a lot of our local systems very fragile. The 6% cut of the 10% cut that was restored in 2010 helped greatly, but there's still a lot of impact going on locally. One of my local providers in my part of the world closed its doors. It was one of our very largest providers, closed just days after receiving a favorable accreditation. So this is an issue for our communities. At this point in time, Wyoming's 21st from the top in waiver funding in the United States. Now, with the money that's currently added for the biennium, there will be probably 30 new adults being served, but there's still 339 people on our three waivers waiting list. So this amendment does not ask for the full 4% restoration, but it does ask you to help restore funding back to the 2008 level for those people who are indeed our most vulnerable citizens of Wyoming. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Brothers and sisters of the 61st, if you'd pull out the two-page legal-size handout that has in the upper right-hand corner H3015 and then my House district number, what you'll find is a spreadsheet. And what you'll find about halfway through with a circle around it is the percentage reductions from the governor's budget. Now, as you'll recall, the governor did a 10% across-the-board reduction, but each department was able to allocate that deduction. So certain programs didn't receive the full 10%, and certain programs did receive the full 10%. But the actual budget reductions for DD programs, you'll see there in the middle of the column, ranged from about a 2% reduction to a 40% reduction with the respite care. But overall, it was between about a 3% reduction range. And then we added 6% back in the 2011-12 budget bill. And over on the far corner, and I know it's a little cut off on the copy, the average growth in that program from the 09 budget, 09-10, to the 11-12 budget was a 6% increase in those programs. Then if you turn to the next page, you see what the effect of the amendments are. Now, this is the 4% amendment instead of the 2% amendment. So down there in the middle of the second page, instead of that $4.4 million, cut that in half because it's a biennial appropriation. What you see in actual growth in this program over in the far right-hand column between 09, 010 to 13, 14 works out in some areas to a 14% increase or a 15% increase. So in actuality, these programs haven't suffered to the degree that other programs have suffered. Equally as worthy programs, programs for people taking care of our elderly, taking care of our small children. So instead of having a 6% growth, we're going to be looking at even a greater growth, 7 or 8 or 10% growth. So brothers and sisters, as a 61st, when you look at the numbers, the damages aren't quite as bad as portrayed. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. And so there are other areas where we should allocate our money equitably. If we're going to bring up programs, let's bring them all up equitably and not seek out one program to bring up. So I'd urge you to defeat this amendment.
Representative Botten.
Mr. Speaker, a famous person I can't remember once said there's lies, there's blankety-blank lies, and then there's statistics. Now, I think you could, you know, the secret to statistics is your reference points. You can get a reference point over here and a reference point over here, and you can actually show a 10% decrease is an increase. Well, enough said about that. What really happened on the ground? I speak for my folks back home in my district. I told you on Tuesday of an organization. There's three organizations in my county that deal with developmentally disabled folks, and one of which had some actual real-life results that sure didn't feel like an increase or just a minor decrease. 73 people lost their jobs. There was a sale of three parcels of real estate to try to stay in operation, a depletion of operational reserves. That's real life. And might I add 20 months in the red. That's real. That's really what's going on the ground. Help is on the way in the coming years, and certainly those folks appreciate that. When you have a horse and you take away 10% of its feed, gets pretty hungry. And then a year later, you give it back 6%, but it's still 4% down. I submit to you that horse is still a little hungry. So it sounds like a little bit undue whining and complaining, but I'm speaking for my folks back home that would appreciate some help, and it's heartfelt. 2 days ago, I asked for a vote of compassion. This is trimmed down by half. And on behalf of the folks back home, I'm simply asking for a vote of aye on this amendment from your heart. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Okay, so here we have three different things going on here with money. With DD, the three big problems is always the wait list is always high, so we have to always put money in to get the wait list down. I think we all agree we need to get those wait lists down. The second issue is this 10%. Made a 10% cut. We gave them back 6% last year, and this is about getting at least 2 back. So instead of the 4 that we saw in second reading, now it's 2. And then third is this issue of service units in the formula. Here's the deal. I mean, I've actually stood up here quite a few different years and gotten more money to reduce the wait list. Last year, the good gentleman from Johnson County, he was up, and along with the chair of Health and Labor, and she was up. And there was quite a few people, and we got that 6% back in. And it was a big to-do that we got that money for those folks. And I understand the argument, the heartfelt, the compassion. You know, I can remember standing up here and talking about how these are people that need our help probably more than anybody. I meet with these parents. We have a little group in our community, and we get together, and we talk about what we're going to do. I got to tell you, it got a little frustrating because every year we're doing this. Every year it's either we're talking about one issue with DD. So the good chairman of Health and Labor, she did this wonderful thing. There was this bill. to create a, what do you call that, a select committee. And there was three wonderful people from this body on that. And one was is from Midwest, and one's from the financial wizard from here in Cheyenne, along with the good chair of Health and Labor. And those three sat down with some senators on the other side, and they worked really hard this summer. And if you want to read their report, it's actually on the legislative website. It's an excellent report. They went through and really got down to the nuts and bolts. What are the issues? What needs to happen? And they came out with some great recommendations. One of those recommendations is to fund, to get these service units back up to where they're supposed to be. And this is where it gets difficult, because you're seeing this amendment, but you haven't seen a bill yet. There's actually a bill, SF-29, that's going to come, you know, it passed out of Labor Committee last night. So you'll see it in a few days. And that has $1.275 million in it to be appropriated. That's an extremely important bill. That bill fixes a lot of the funding formula issues. And it puts that money in, and this is a matching money, so you do the 1.275 from us, and the feds put in their 1.275, and miraculously you're up to about 2.5. That's an important appropriation that needs to go through, and that's in a bill. You haven't seen that yet. Here's my worry, that we're all going to vote for this, which is interesting, and then maybe we won't vote for the bill. The bill is where we actually planned out. We actually did what the legislature's supposed to do. We saw a problem. We appointed legislators. They sat down. They worked hard. They came up with solutions. They have a bill. That's the answer, is that bill. Now, that doesn't solve all these issues, but we can't solve all of them all in the same day. We got to take this one at a time. And here's the real issue. We need to see how we get these service units and the funding formula working again. Next year is the year that we should come back and have a longer talk about maybe giving them more money. But this is not the year to do this amendment. We need to see how that committee's work went and how that bill goes. Hopefully we'll pass that bill. I think there's no one in this room that doesn't have compassion and heartfelt concern, and we all agree on that. The deal is that we have to have a plan, and we have a plan, and let's follow that plan. Let's follow our good chairman of Health and Labor and her committee. She came up with a good plan. This is going to work. I'd urge you to vote no on this amendment, and then later on you're going to see a bill that I would urge you to vote yes on.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To my good colleague from House District 30, I would say that you live in a unique area and that the providers there do face a bigger range of cost of living. And they do need, I mean, I am not trying to diminish that there are problems in your area. But I just have to so much agree with Mr. Speaker Pro Tem and also our majority floor leader. And if you would take his handout and turn to page 2, let me walk through this with you just a little bit. If you look at the bottom half of page 2 and the percentage of growth, the 0480 DD adult waiver, the budget bill, the amendments, the amounts doubled by the federal match brought them up to 14%. That's the adult DD waiver. Part of that is through attrition, when people die or move, they refill their slots. And so people continue to come off that waiting list at a very slow pace. And so some units are added in, and that 14.28% is for the adult DD waiver, and that includes what we did last year. Now, if you go down to the preschool services at 4002, and they have a 15.9%, that is set up statutorily. And that is where each child, there is a per child amount. Now, they took the 10% cut also. They continue to identify children who they can help at that birth through five age to keep them out of special ed or to lower their needs in special ed later on in life. So here, there are your two biggest increases. So what is the real answer? The real answer is the bill that is coming up, and it did pass out of committee last night. That bill fixes the units so that each provider, as they bill, will be able to buy to bill for every service that they provide. And I submit to you that next year, if this chart were replicated, then you would see, again, an addition in that 048DD adult waiver. You're going to see that percentage increase again because they will be able to accurately bill what they do. We did a cost-based reimbursement system, and we accounted for absolutely everything. We accounted for workers' comp. We accounted for vacation time. We accounted for sick leave. We accounted for clients being in the hospital and having to retain employees that didn't have perhaps duties that day. We accounted for every single thing except buildings, because we don't buy buildings for private entities. We never have. It's against our constitution. That's why we contract with private nonprofits to do this work, is that they have the ability to raise funds locally, and they have the ability to apply for community development block grants and for other monies to build their buildings. We are responsible for the operations. We contract with them to do the operations. And the bill coming before you is going to fix that unit problem, and it is going to add another almost $3 million when you add the general fund and the federal fund. And so do we need to add to the budget this time? And you guys, you've never heard me say no in this area before, and I'm telling you today, no. We do not need to add this budget amendment. We're fixing the problem. They still are suffering. It's going to take a while to get it all sorted out. But the other part of that bill is not just accounting for those units. The other part of that bill deals with rebasing the cost base. We're going to rebase what that cost-based reimbursement system is. And by the time we come back next year, there will be a mechanism in place, just like with nursing homes, just like with developmental preschools, just like other systems that are already in place, that automatically the cost of living that happens in Wyoming will be given to these folks. And then what will we see when it comes budget time? We will see the only other issue left, and that is the waiting list. If my heart were going anywhere this year, it would be toward the waiting list. And you have not seen a budget amendment from me about the waiting list, because I think these other things need to be addressed first. I think we need to get that cost-based reimbursement system accurate. That's what we worked on all summer. It is the job that we did. We feel that it's accurate. And with the rebasement, there will be an accurate reflection of what it costs providers to provide the services that we contract with them to do. I'm a no vote on this amendment. Follow your own heart.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the excellent discussion and the excellent background information on this issue that is truly of great importance to so many of our Wyoming citizens. Senate File 29 that's coming before you is an excellent piece of legislation. I would absolutely urge its adoption, and I would call the question on the amendment.
All those in favor of third reading amendment number 15 to House Bill 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 15 to House Bill 1 has failed. We are now on, well, actually, we're going to take a break. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House stand in recess until 1:45 p.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee announcements, anything? Chairman Berger.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number two will meet immediately upon adjournment to hear a bill.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number eight, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet tonight, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room H-17. We will hear Senate File 124, engrossed, overweight and oversized vehicle penalties.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number six, Travel, will meet at 9:40 or 9:15 tomorrow, where we'll have a little get-together about interim topics in room H-10.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number nine will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room H-18 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Friday, 15 minutes upon noon resets in room H-17, where we will continue Senate File 145, engrossed Medicaid fraud recovery, and here, Senate File 139, engrossed health care pilot project amendments, and then we're finished with our bills.
All right. Any other announcements? The House will stand in recess until 1:45 p.m.